Okay, good morning. Well, I welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, May 6, 2010. We'll begin this morning's meeting with a presentation, and we will discuss and provide direction on budget issues related to first the transportation department and second the engineering department. Mr. Clevenger.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mayor and Council. I brought my transportation team with me. With me today is Alan Sanderson representing Traffic Engineering, Lenny Hume from Field Operations, Elisa Jin with our Financial Group. I'm Dan Clevenger, Transportation Director. We're here in March and we gave a presentation on our CIP program. Today we'd like to go over our operational budget. Our budget for this next fiscal year is very similar to this current fiscal year. What I'll do is I'll try to run through that pretty quickly, identify some of our minor budget reductions, and then we can have a discussion on local street sales tax. The streets program budget provides funding to plan, maintain, operate the city's transportation network. Our proposed program budget for this next year is $65 million. The council strategic initiatives most closely associated with transportation are economic development, quality of life, and financial stability. This pie chart shows a breakdown of our funding sources at the program level. Again, our total revenues are about $65 million. Over 90% of this funding comes from two sources, the Highway User Revenue Fund, that's the gas tax and vehicle registration from the state, and then about $28.9 million from the dedicated 3/10 of a cent local transportation sales tax. Call your attention to that number and for the local sales tax is about $28.9 million. That does include money from our fund balance transfer. So we actually get on an annual basis. This next year we're expecting $21.3 million, and we can talk about that a little bit later.
Dan, there was a lot of talk when we were talking in transit about state funds being swept and redirected and this and that. Could you give us a little background on the status of our HERF and the vulnerability of those funds and the Prop 400 also?
Yes, sir. HERF, and Chuck may be able to help on this a little bit too. We've got a forecast from Chuck for the next 5 years. And it is down. I don't have a graph right here to show how much it's down, but it's I'd say it's at risk to some degree of from the state, but not a large degree. We get
you're going to need to get a little bit more detailed on that as to why it's at, first of all, explain why it's going to be down. And secondly, then why it's at risk and why the degrees of risk.
I'm going to defer to Chuck on that.
Okay. There's two factors here. The first factor that we're talking about now is due to the economy. Less gallons sold, less money collected for HERF. So the more gallons sold.
Well, not only the economy, the change in, as gas prices go up, people drive less.
Correct.
And the increase in overall fleet mileage, too. So, I mean, we're changing as it relates to gas taxes.
Right. Anything that affects the number of gallons sold affects the HERF collections because it's a fixed price per gallon.
It's part of the gas tax.
Right. The issue I think that you're talking about is there was some discussion at the legislative level this year about changing the formula and the distribution pools that are related to HERF. So far, as I've been told by Scott, nothing has ended up being changed thus far.
But it has been on the table and it is hanging out there. There's no constitutional or other provision that would prevent the legislature from at some point in time sweeping this or eating into this or something like that. See Mr. Butler coming up. That's what I just want everyone to understand, because, you know, once again with the lottery funds, the assumption was those were part of the lottery approval, and the legislature had no problem with coming in and sweeping all those.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, you're correct. Usually. Typically, every year there is a proposal out there that involves a larger redirection of HERF funds to other projects, mainly state. Well, almost every time state.
Well, I mean, do these projects with the highway user, are those limited to transportation projects, and you're talking about the redirection from road at the local to road at the state, or are they out of the local straight into general fund?
Typically, they will, the legislative proposals have targeted a particular area like DPS. So they'll increase additional HERF funding to the Department of Public Safety so that they can redirect other general fund money to other projects out of the state general fund. So they'll usually try to direct it to DPS to have some form of nexus to why they're transportation. But
yeah, so they may starve DPS funding from traditional general fund sources and fill that in with HERF.
Which frees up additional general fund to use on other state projects. Great.
They will do that.
And Mayor, I'm going to have to apologize. These slides you see, the ones in front of you have breakouts of dollar amounts and percentages. For some reason on our PowerPoint we sent, they're not showing, but you have them
You. Go to the next slide. They come up one at a time, I think. They did. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so back on this is the piece. Okay. Again, so over 90% of those that funding comes from those two sources we discussed, and then there's some pass-through dollars in the program that don't contribute to our operational budget. Those are about $3 million. That's going to have to describe some colors for those looking at home. That's the green piece. That's about $3 million general fund. That's for general obligation bonds, and then about $2.8 million in the blue color. That's the Prop 400 reimbursements. The largest portion of that one comes from a power road project between Santan and Pecos. On to a breakdown, really, of the...
Dan?
Yes, sir.
Councilmember Richards?
Just to be clear, did you say the allocation from the general fund is going for debt service?
That would be correct. It's okay. For general obligation bonds.
Okay, thanks.
So those are pre...
Let me give you what that is specifically.
Yeah, give us a break down so we can so everyone can understand.
That is a secondary property tax that's coming in to cover their debt that's related to their new issuance.
Okay, so that's the new issue.
Yes,
and that's why it's there. So
when otherwise there is no general fund going to the streets program at this time.
Okay.
This is straight with secondary property tax.
That's important to understand the difference. So rather than general fund, a better thing would say be the secondary property tax is the $3 million. I'm getting blank looks. Is that a correct restatement? All right.
That's correct.
It's a pass-through.
Because when we see general fund, we're assuming that's general fund sources. And I get it that in the accounting, but for our purposes, we need to keep a very separate train of thought as it relates to sources being general fund, which is sales tax and everything, all goes into the pot and then gets divvied out, versus secondary property tax, which is a very dedicated source and a very dedicated use.
That's correct.
So this is the very dedicated source and the very dedicated use that's just flowing through.
Yes, and I'll make it very clear. There's only two funding sources in the transportation operational budget. It's HERF and the local sales tax for transportation. That's all we use.
Now, there are past street bonds, let's say, and I know there's really no such thing as a street bond, but there are past street bonds that are being paid for out of sales tax and general fund collections.
Correct.
These are old. These are pre-2008.
Actually, Mayor, we use HERF bonds for that, and we're using about $12.5 million a year for the next almost 16 years.
We're using HERF receipts to cover those bonds that were put out.
Shows you the breakdown of debt
service. As it relates to the budget.
Oh, okay.
So on this slide of the streets program budget, our priority for expenditures, first thing we pay is our debt service, Mayor, and we talked about the $12.4 million next year, and again, that level continues for about 15, 16 years before it drops off. We have HPANs, that's in the purple, that's about 3% or $1.7 million.
Question.
Councilmember Higgins.
I'm sorry, but Dan, you said 12 and ours says 15. Is it 12 or?
It's a total of 15, and that includes $3 million for GO bonds.
It's 15.3, and you got 12.4 out of the HERF, out of the highway user funds, and 2.9 out of the secondary property tax.
That's correct. And as soon as I get out of this program budget,
which
it gets a lot
simpler. Which, if you wait, I'll add that up on my calculator, but I think that adds up to 15.3.
It gets a lot simpler when we get into the operations budget, so if you can bear with me. HPANs, highway project advancement notes. That's my one acronym, so I'm trying to not.
And those are specifically related to the 802.
That's correct. That's
which for, is down in the Gateway
for,
area.
Correct. That's okay. For design and right-of-way protection. And then our third priority is funding for operations and then capital. You see the biggest piece of pie there, the blue one, $42.2 million. That's how we fund our day-to-day activities. On the capital slice, that piece of red there, that makes up about $6 million. That's for the RTP projects or Prop 400, federal grants, and some small.
RTP meaning?
RTP is Regional Transportation Plan, Prop 400.
Thank you very much.
And then about $400,000 for some new signal construction.
Okay.
Now, this gets a little easier. Here's the streets operation.
Well, I'm glad it's getting easier because
we have five services, street maintenance, traffic operations, environmental quality, traffic engineering, and administration. I'll just give you a little snapshot of each one of these and the budget associated with them. Here's what we do in street maintenance. It's responsible for, obviously, maintaining our asphalt. That's streets, alleys, and parking lots. Concrete repairs. We have a significant amount of landscaping in our medians and land adjacent to some of our streets. We also maintain alleys, of course, and then we have 2.25 miles of shared use path. Those are along the crosscut canals and the consolidated canals. This map just gives you a glimpse of what we expect to do next year for our various seal coats, overlays, reconstructs, and this includes our ERA projects. We had $10.8 million worth of ERA projects, they're in there as well.
Stimulus money?
Stimulus money.
Thank you very much.
This does not include other capital projects like the bond or the Prop 400.
Three strikes and you're out?
I might be out here soon then. Okay, here's another piece of pie broken up. This is street maintenance. Our total budget for street maintenance is $22.9 million. I'll just give you some of the bigger chunks. Contracted services represents 39%. That's the purple. And that's for seal coating, overlays, landscape maintenance, and concrete repair. If you look at commodities, I'm going to find my color there. It's the light blue, $5.5 million or 24%. That's for asphalt, concrete, landscaping materials, and things like that. All those materials are competitively bid. And then we have about 14% for personal services. That pays for city staff. The next work group is traffic operations. That consists of signing, striping, and street lights. Let's give you a little information on what the quantities we maintain. We maintain about 58,000 traffic signs, 1,700 miles of street markings, that's the paint, 38,000 street lights, and about 9,000 short line markings. The short line markings are things like the bike lane markings and arrows you see on the pavement. The budget breakdown for traffic operations, about $8.3 million. That includes 29% for city staff, that's personal services. We have about 28% utilities, that's electricity for streetlights, so that's fairly high. And then for commodities, about 14%, that pays for things like streetlights, aluminum signs, sign sheeting, and striping materials.
What do we contract out on the operations? It's not a huge number, but just, I mean, maintenance, we basically contract almost everything we do on maintenance, or a large percentage of it. That's the overlays and those kind of things. On operations, it's very small. What do we contract out?
Mayor, we contract out mainline striping. We have a contractor does that. We have a short line striping's done, contracted.
And is supplements that just over things that our crews can't get to?
It supplements our activities. Okay. And probably the biggest chunk in this contract side is streetlight installations, poles that get knocked down, poles that get replaced, spot improvements are all done by contracted services.
Okay.
The third service is environmental quality. What those folks do is they treat the shoulders for dust abatement, maintain the storm drain system. That includes about 9,400 catch basins and over 400 dry wells. Really, that's to keep our streets from flooding and to minimize flooding, at least in the event where we have some of the larger storms. And we do street sweeping as well. Our cycle is every 4 weeks on residential. We do that in-house. And then every weekly, basically, on arterial streets, that's contracted work. The budget breakdown for this service is about $2.4 million. Contracted services represent about 36%. That's for the sweeping and the storm drain maintenance. Personal services represent about 19%. And equipment usage, as our sweepers and our Vactor truck, represents about 18% of that total. fourth service of five in traffic engineer is traffic engineering has six primary functions. It's the traffic studies group, the ITS or traffic signals group, who installs, maintains, and operates the traffic signal system. We've got a plan review function, which provides consultation to development and sustainability department and on city design projects. We have a traffic education, traffic safety education function, interagency coordination with ADOT, the county, and our adjacent cities, and a temporary traffic control, which is our barricading service oversight for construction activities and special events. Cost of those services, about $8 million. And the breakdown, it's 40% is for personal services. That's the large, darker blue piece. For commodities, about 19%. That provides for signal equipment, cameras for traffic monitoring, video detection products. And 10% goes to contracted services. Examples of those are signal installation, installation of signal detector loops, pulling and splicing fiber optics, and things like that. Onto administration. It includes four work groups: the admin support folks, transportation planning, financial staff, and asset management. Their costs are covered within the other four services. Like all the other departments, we were asked to consider some budget reductions this year. We've done that. Currently, we have about 162 authorized positions in transportation. We've been maintaining the past few years between 12 and 15 vacancies, so we're operating about 90-91% of our staffing, and we're getting by. What we've offered up is three positions. In total, our budget reductions are about $410,000. The three positions we've identified, the first one, assistant ITS analyst, that's a vacant position. It's been vacant for a while in the traffic management center. We can get by without that one. The second one is actually a filled position. We have an employee who's on an acting assignment in ITS or Intelligent Transportation Systems in the signal group, acting as ITS engineer. We're working on essentially a transfer. And then the third position is actually Alan's.
Been nice knowing.
Yeah. Alan's been covering two positions, my former position, deputy director, and traffic engineer. I'm going to combine the two. We can... Al's been doing a great job covering both, but we're going to take one off the books. So, you know, you either take traffic engineer off the books or deputy transportation director. It's my intention to take the traffic engineer off the books, and Alan will act as traffic engineer as well for city code authorization and things like that, but his title would be deputy transportation director. And the last item there, just about $89,000 worth of savings, are reductions in ITS, again, intelligent transportation systems. We're currently leasing telephone lines. We're going to remove some from the system because we've been converting some of our signals over to the newer system, and we'll be reducing temporary services in that area as well. So that concludes basically the operational budget. I'm prepared now, if there's no questions, to get in just a little more detail about the local street sales tax.
Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. Under the environmental quality, under dust abatement, I remember reading in some preliminary information about alleys. How much work does the alleys take to, is it caught or captured under this dust abatement? And is there a possibility or some way to look at more alley abatements to be able to reduce some costs long term for us having to maintain those?
You mean abandonment?
Yeah, alley abandonment. Thank you.
Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, as I mentioned here, we don't aggressively go out and ask for abandonment. We take them in and go through real estate services and make the formal request to do an abandonment program. Alley maintenance, it depends. The only time I shouldn't say the only time. When we do maintenance on an alley is when we typically get complaints. It's still the property owner's responsibility back at the alley to keep the alley free of weeds and debris and things like that. We respond to illegal dumps. People go out there and dump stuff. That's the kind of things that we've had success in those projects and areas where we did the abandonment program, where they've locked the gates in those few areas. And obviously we encourage if we can, but there's also some drawbacks to that. Some alleys we can't abandon because of the right-of-way responsibility and requirements for other utilities. But it is part, like, basically what we're responding to right now is alley cleanups that we get for legal dumping.
Mayor, if I could follow up. Well, I'm hoping that we'll look for an opportunity maybe to see if there's cost-benefit analysis to start maybe more aggressively initiating some alley abandonments. I know it's the cost of gates, but if there's any savings captured by the city for that of dumping or some real problem areas, that would be nice. I know it's a well-received program in the community. People appreciate it, but the cost of the gates, maybe there's a way to say if we don't have to clean up dumped alley, you know, dumps in the alleys, we might be able to do something.
Well, Mayor Council, that's exactly the program we have, is because we did that analysis and said it would be cheaper for us to use one-time dollars to put the gate in than it is to do the ongoing cleanup. The challenge is, we're willing to do that, and maybe we can continue to be aggressive in advertising, but we have to get the cooperation of all the property owners, as well as we also have to get the concurrence of the other utilities, whether it's
All your communications.
But we agree. We would love to get out of there and have those secured and try to do it. But we'll keep looking at ways to keep promoting that. But we try to do that, especially when we do our neighborhood, building stronger neighborhood sweeps. We really try to use that as a program to encourage. But council, if there's neighborhoods or groups out there, we're certainly in favor of that program.
And Councilman Finn, I'm sorry, I was a little misleading. The field operation folks don't go out aggressively, go out and say, let's abandon it right away, or abandon the alleys. But there is a program available, like Chris said. We do provide the gates, the first lock. Everything is provided by the city. We have a couple options for the gates that we can put in. And the property owners, it's the biggest issue, is trying to get all the property owners to agree to take it over.
Well, that's part I didn't realize. So we have gone out and said, hey, we'll do the gates, the locks. Yeah, that's kind of lost. I get a lot of calls in through, District 2. So I know now that's a resource. So thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Well, but it's limited. We're not unlimited to be able to put a whole lot of gates in, but we do have some funds available. But this is a very big shift from what we were just a few short years ago, of requiring a fee to make an application and go through the whole thing. So we've made it much, much easier to abandon those alleys, but we still have to get the cooperation of the property owners.
Go ahead.
Okay, just a little background on where the sales tax came from. In May 2006, voters authorized a 0.3% sales tax, local street sales tax. And I have to tell you, Mayor, we're very grateful to have this funding source, but even at a reduced rate, with HERF being down and our needs being as great as they are, I'm not sure what we would do without that. If you look at the ballot language, it talks about that this money would be used for street construction, street operations, street maintenance, and street capital equipment. There's also a note here on the HERF maintenance of effort. That's a state requirement that the city spend the $5 million towards their street activities to qualify for HERF dollars. Previously, before this vote in 2006, that did come from the general fund. There was $5 million that transferred to streets for that. But now that we have the dedicated sales tax, that $5 million comes right out of sales tax.
Dedicated sales tax.
Dedicated sales tax. And again, the pie did not show up here. It did work. You've got proof of it in front of you. there's two pieces of pie on the left side of what
none
you can see.
Money went to PowerPoint.
None of it went to PowerPoint.
You ran out on this slide.
I think the PowerPoint was one of the two positions that was consolidated. I think Alan, that was part of the one that got consolidated. He said, if that position's going away, I'm not doing the PowerPoint.
At least what the council has in front of them is
what happens when you give them a title?
is a pie chart. On the left side, you have two chunks exploded, if you will. It's the kind of pinkish color. It's $5.3 million for overlays and about $8.7 million for seal coating. These are really complementary activities. Think of it as seal coating. The seal coating is extending the pavement life out there, and the overlays are adding or giving new pavement life, if you will.
Do you have one?
Keep going down.
You got a blank one? Okay. So I just want to call attention to those two activities. That's what I'm going to talk about on the next slide. And this is my last slide. This slide pertains to overlays and reconstruction. So next year's budget includes $5.3 million for overlays and reconstructs. Our need really is on the order of $11 million a year. In the last couple of years, we've been underfunded. And the reason we can deal with that is that ERA funding helped make up the difference. That was the $10.8 million, again, stimulus funds Thank you, Mayor. And so, sometimes we're asked when we'll be caught up on our pavement overlays and reconstructs. And really, what it is a cycle. It's not really getting caught up. It's a continuous process. Think of it this way. If we had a need to replace our pavement every 30 years, have a 30-year cycle, replace every 30 years, you need on an annual basis to replace about 3.3% of your system. If we thought we could get to a 40-year cycle, which is stretching it, you'd have to replace about 2.5% of your system on an annual basis. We were asked, while Transit was doing their budget last week or the week before, we were asked to show the impact of redirecting up to 1/6 of our local street sales tax funds to Transit. Remember the figure of the $21.3 million? That's what we expect to come in next year for the dedicated sales tax for streets. 1/6 of that would be about $3.5 million. And if you look at a 5-year forecast, which I show on the slide, that'd be about $19.5 million over 5 years. So our forecast shows a 5-year need at that funding I described, $5.3 million for the first year, then jumping back to 11 when the stimulus dollars had been spent in year two, and continuing with that inflated at 3% per year. That comes up. That's how I get the 51.3. If with full funding, if you look at the last column, we can treat 314 lane miles of our street system. If, with the reduced funding, if 1/6 of the sales tax is taken out and redirected, we'd only be able to complete about 195 lane miles. That's a reduction of about 38%. So that's the kind of the financial impact. The types of things we'll see out there over time when with funding being reduced would be, we'd see more cracking, which would result in potholes. We'd see some patchwork repairs. The texture would be rougher, and it'd be noisier. It's kind of what happens to the system. So that's basically my presentation. I'm sure there'll be some more discussion on sales tax, and we're happy to answer any questions if we can.
Okay, so to summarize just what I think I heard, you're saying that with the financial downturn and the lower overall collections in the city, that we have backed off to where we're completely and totally reliant on the dedicated sales tax, the 0.3, and HERF. Whereas before, we were program-oriented, where we said this is the number of, and that has determined what we do in our program. Before what we did, well, not before, let's assume that we had full funding. Let's assume that we weren't in this financial trough. We'd be saying, here's our city, here's what we need to do to maintain the roads based on the schedule, which is an engineering decision and a maintenance decision that will keep our streets and roads within the normal cycle for maintenance, which will prolong the life, maximize the life of our asphalt, and also provide for current drivability standards, let's say. So you get a twofer there. With the downturn in the economy, and to maintain that program from an engineering standpoint, that takes dedicated sales tax, HERF, plus some other coverage. Is that accurate?
Yes, Mayor. In fact, we rely, too, on these capital projects, Prop 400 projects and things like that. That's also giving us new pavement, some widening, of course, but that gives us new pavement in the system.
So what we're saying is that because we don't have the full measure of funding because of the financial downturn, we have backed off and we are not meeting our engineering schedule. So even right now, while we have significant funding from both the dedicated sales tax and HERF, it does not meet our engineering needs. It does not meet the schedule that we would have if we were fully funded from a, here are the streets, here's what the engineers say, here's what the maintenance says. So we're not keeping up right now.
That's correct.
That's correct. Long term, we wouldn't be able to put it that way.
If you're not keeping up on the current schedule, then long term, you're not keeping up. So you're not keeping up on the year to year. And that's not a condemnation. That's our reality.
Yes.
That is what we're doing is we're taking the monies that we have that are dedicated. We're doing the best we can. But that doesn't meet our full engineering. I call it engineering needs because
it is.
You have streets out there, and whether you have money or not, those streets get traveled on. You get potholes. You have wear and tear, and you should be maintaining that. It's sort of like with your car. What we're basically doing is instead of changing the oil every 3,000 miles, we're changing it every 4,000 miles because we don't have the money to take it to Jiffy Lube every 3,000.
That's correct.
Okay? And we know that, you know, yeah, that may save us money right now, but the engine life, if you extend that time between oil changes because of financial considerations, that engine life gets reduced because we're just not maintaining. That's where we are right now. Now, we hope that when we get out of this trough, we'll be able to restore the transportation, the maintenance, to the every 3,000 miles kind of oil change. That's what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. So if we were to redirect, we, you know, there's obviously money to redirect, but we're understanding that we're choosing between, you know, two very, very worthy needs, but there's a price to be paid as far as maintenance, just as there's a price to be paid with transit, and so it's sort of a catch-22 is what I'm hearing.
That's correct, Mayor. And, okay. And if you go back to 2006, when the 0.3% sales tax was approved, at that time we anticipated higher HERF, and we thought sales tax would be rolling in as well. That would have funded us a lot higher, at a lot higher level. You know, you talk about the economic reality. That's what happened. Both are lower. We're dealing with it, and we're trying to.
Yeah, I don't think that when we passed when this was presented in 2006, anyone ever envisioned that this would be our ultimate backstop.
Right.
I mean, it was dedicated. It was meant to show the voting public, hey, listen, it was one way we could identify a use that benefited everybody, because we all use streets one way or another. And the main purpose was not to protect it from a financial downturn as much as to direct it and be able to maintain this funding source and put it into a cause that everyone could literally connect to and support. As it's turned out, you know, it was really a good thing, because without that, we would be pushed even more than where we are right now from our streets. And streets are easy to sort of ignore. I mean, this council could abandon the streets and leave it for the next council, or actually two councils from now, and then they'd be in a world of hurt. We wouldn't do that, but I think that you know, this removes any temptation, because we keep even a minimum level of maintenance. But I think the citizens need to understand that even at that, we are every year somewhat falling behind, simply because the total dollars are not there to meet the engineering needs of the street maintenance.
That's correct.
Okay, so if we were to redirect, well, we understand, well put, you know, yes. we could have the same discussion on, which we did on transit, where we have huge needs in transit too.
Absolutely.
You know, we're it's not like we're moving one luxury to another luxury. We definitely have needs in both areas. I just want to make sure we understand what it would mean if we were to consider a transfer. Councilmember Richens.
I noticed with interest the slide that you had about what you do, and I didn't see sidewalks fall anywhere. And you know, I see a lot of people walking around on the street. It always amazes me how many people are walking around even in the middle of the summer. Who maintains the sidewalks? How many miles of sidewalks do we have?
Mayor, Councilman Rich, I can't give you the exact miles, but our street maintenance folks maintain it. We have a contract service that repairs them. We also do an in-house crew that does repairs.
But that falls under you guys.
That's correct. So it's under the street maintenance section. It's the big pot of money, the very first activity-based budget that Dan showed. It's a street maintenance. It's part of it. We left the concrete out of it, but I know how many miles. I just don't have that number off the top of my head.
So all these guys I see in my neighborhood replacing two sections of sidewalk, what pot of money does that come out of?
That's come out of the street maintenance section. That's out of our area.
Sales tax.
You consider the street from edge of sidewalk to edge of sidewalk, yeah, basically.
Actually, I do right away to right away.
Right away, right even outside. Landscape. That's right, because you got landscape, you got that's other great. Stuff. Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Concrete repair.
Stuff. Engineering.
Yeah. So the cyber gods going to be good to me this morning? Presentation. It's May 6th. It's having a hard time today,
yeah,
huh?
It's freezing.
You want to close it out after opening it again? Good morning. While he's working on our technology a little bit, hopefully cyber world will be good to me this morning. I wanted to start out this morning and with
Kelly Jensen, our assistant city engineer, and for the mayor who enjoys an acronym so much, we call Kelly the ACE because he's the assistant city engineer up on our floor. So, and then I also wanted to start out with just a thank you to all of you for your confidence and support. We do take a great deal of pride in being the folks that manage the bricks and mortar of building a better Mesa, and we do appreciate your help and assistance because there are many times we're out working in the public, and it's disruptive, and we know it, and you all get in and help us and work through stuff, and we do appreciate everything you do for us, so thank you. Okay, we're good this morning. Can we get it off the flash drive? Would that work? Okay, I'm going to get this up. Let's do this. This will work. On the slide.
We'll just blame it on Alan.
Okay, it is his fault.
Why not?
Well, let's start out with what we do.
I know.
So what we do. We are the infrastructure folks for the city, and we do that two ways. One is through the city's capital improvement program. Another is through private development. A lot of the private development firms, when they're working and active, build a great deal of the city's infrastructure, and we work with them as they build infrastructure. Also, when most people look at a street, they see the asphalt and the street lights and the sidewalks and think of it as streets. We look at it, as Lenny said, as right-of-way because there's many other things going on out in the right-of-way. We have a lot of non-city-owned utilities who have their facilities in our right-of-way. And so what we find is that right-of-way actually becomes utility corridors in addition to traffic corridors. So there's much more going on there, and we work with our private sector and our in-house utilities when they want to be in the right-of-way. And then we also are the capital managers for the stormwater program. Rain and stormwater doesn't know much in the way of boundaries or borders, so we work with the Regional Flood Control Authority and develop the regional projects and some of the local projects. We serve as technical advisors, and we get many, many, many interesting questions every month, varying in a wide range of issues, both from the public and from internal staff. We had a wood bridge recently that came up that fire was nervous about taking engine trucks over, and they called us out. We worked with the neighborhood and reinforced, got the bridge reinforced and resolved some that particular concern. So there's many times we get called out into the public to work with them on a variety of issues, as well as we do a lot of agency coordination. A lot of we'll end up with Maricopa County Flood Control, Maricopa County Department of Transportation, and a variety of other agencies around the state, as well as the town of Gilbert, city of Apache Junction, Pinal County. We meet with all of those folks pretty routinely and manage and coordinate projects. And I have a presentation, I think, back up on the screen. And I did want to point out we were very careful this morning to color coordinate our presentation with Mr. Brady's attire today. So, yes, they won.
Wait.
Yes, they won.
Yeah. Well, we all convert after we get our.
All right.
We need to remind everyone of Mr. Brady's resume. He was the assistant city manager in the city of San Antonio. But that's okay. He's got a few more championship rings to gloat about than we do. So.
Trying to bring one here.
Yes,
oh,
we are.
Thank you.
Okay. So moving on. This is looking towards the end of the current fiscal year and the projects that we've worked through in the capital budget this year. We're forecasting about $100 million towards the end of the year that we will have encumbered or expended, began construction. And that just breaks down the variety of the departments we work with and the funding sources that make up the capital program for this year. One of the things we also monitor is the numbers of projects that we work on in addition to the capital dollars that we expend. And this is the last three fiscal years. I have to give Kelly and our deputy engineer for design a great deal of credit right now. When the construction market prices started to fall, they really got in and started moving projects in the last 3 years. And it's been good for the city because we've been able to capitalize on the market that exists today. So. And then this is looking forward at the 10-11 capital budget and the variety of projects that are currently slated to begin design and construction in the coming year. You'll see many of them coming up on the agendas as we start to bring forward contracts and construction work. And then I want to talk about a little bit about this year's fiscal year bid prices, because we think we're starting to see a little bit of a change in the trend in the market. Throughout the year, we have seen, if you look at this graph on the left side in the darker kind of rust color, is what our actual bid prices have been coming in. The blue numbers, the blue columns, are what was budgeted for the construction costs in those projects. And you can see, particularly at the beginning of the year, there was a pretty big discrepancy. We were getting pretty, really good bid prices, maybe on the order of 2001, 2002 bid prices, and we were seeing anywhere from 20% to 35% savings over our budgeted funding. I think what we're starting to see now is we're going down from maybe 15 to 30 bidders on our bid projects right now to more like 5 to 15 bidders. And so what we're starting to see in what we're talking about on our floor is, I think we're starting to see kind of a natural cooling of the market there, in terms of some firms have gone out of business, and so there's fewer firms bidding work. And then so we're also starting to see the summer pickup work with the stimulus funding hitting the market. So there's some things that are kind of fluctuating right now. We're watching them and paying attention, but I don't have a crystal ball. But I do think that they're going to start to see some corrections in the market here.
Councilman Richens.
I've had a few people ask me about the bid prices coming in between our budget. Was there any change in standards or quality or anything? Because I've told people no, because we maintain pretty, like, material quality or anything like that to achieve that cost savings.
No, not at all. In fact, but I can tell you, just in terms of unit prices, take 3,000-pound concrete, for instance. You know, a couple of years ago, that was over $100 a yard. Right now, it's $60 a yard. So that's what you're seeing. The prices have come down. The demand dropped. The plants weren't as busy producing materials. And then what we saw is the contractors themselves were pretty much working without profit, and most of them were telling us they were working to keep their crews busy and employed. And so they were taking some reductions in areas that 3 years ago were quite high because the market was a lot hotter. So,
thanks.
Councilman Finter.
How about material costs? How are we looking so far? Can you have any projection on that?
There's a variety of opinions on that right now. I read a report yesterday that believes that they're still continuing to decline slightly, but most people are thinking that this year they'll be level and starting to come back up. I read two or three different reports, and it seems like that's kind of where people are thinking, that they're going to level and come back up. Okay. And these next slides I'm dedicating to Councilmember Richens. It's really a year in review of some of the bigger projects. As a city, we do some amazing things with very limited funding, and we do some very nice projects. And if you look back on the year that you've all been involved with and the projects you've awarded over the last year, it started with streets and the way we provide safe travel, and you can see the variety of projects that are either completed this year. Ray Road, a road where there wasn't a road, is going in right now. Greenfield is going to be wrapping up in June. University and Gilbert wrapped up this year in Councilmember Finter's district. And Dobson and Guadalupe is under construction in Councilmember Cavanaugh's. Those are just a few of those. Storm Drain, we've had a number of regional projects that have come to fruition this year after a number of years of work. This is actually the siphon draw basin on the eastern edge of the city, about 60-acre basin that went in as a joint project. It's about $3.7 million, but the project itself was really more like $7 million because we leveraged the funding from the county flood control.
In the private sector.
Yeah, in the private sector, yes, did have a role in that. We were able to do some amazing things in Parks and Rec this year with the pools that went in, too. So now you can ride the waves at the pools. And then you can go ride the winds at Falcon Field, because there's a number of projects at Falcon Field that also went in with FAA grants and a variety of projects. Fire stations, 218, 215. This year we're looking forward to 219, 220. So, yes, I'm working on it. We're doing everything we can. Public safety, Center Against Family Violence, we have improvements under construction right now. The shooting range, the training facility is bidding in this summer, and you'll be seeing it later this year on the agenda. The court building, which you all just recently commissioned.
Councilmember Summers.
Beth, while I got you here on streets and fire stations, 219 came with the road construction along Elliott, which has some drainage issue. It's not a flooding issue. It's a drainage issue.
Drainage issue.
I say
thank
that
you.
Because FEMA likes to say flooding, and there's not a 500-year floodplain. But trying to get off that subject, which is sore with me, siphon draw will help with some of that flooding.
Yes,
the other part is going to be the road construction. 219 is being delayed by FEMA. Where are we on the construction of Elliott Road, Elliott Road improvements?
We were hoping to be out to award that contract before the council break. We do have a concern with a property owner out there. We are working right now to acquire some property. One of the things that the road involves is a major drainage structure right at the wash where it crosses Signal Butte north of Elliott. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to go out. And essentially what we're building with the road is two lanes, median, and one opposing lane. So we're building our sort of more than half street of the road. But with a wash, when it crosses a road like that, you need to build the drainage facility all the way across the road and the future road, because it doesn't make sense to stop it in the middle of the road. So we're working with a property owner on the west side of the road, which is the northwest corner. We need some property from him to complete that, and as well as a signal on the corner. Kelly's been working with the property owners out there, and we're proceeding with that, but that looks like right now it's going to go a little slower than initially thought. So right now we're looking at bringing it to council to award in September?
August.
So when we come back from council break.
Right. So we're wanting to be under construction before the end of the year and get that moving. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. To the Alston House, which is one of our smaller projects that got renovated. Great. We ended up with some funds from Heritage Funds, I believe, to renovate the Alston House and complete some of those renovations this year. To the things you really don't see until we start setting up barricades, we've done quite a bit with the pole replacement on University, as well as for electric, as well as some 12 kV upgrades in all of the substations. And then gas and water, we've been doing a fairly extensive life cycle replacement plan with Catherine and Frank to replace gas and water mains in older sections of our community. So some of you have seen that work in the past year. We've also been working with redrilling some city wells, water meter rehabs, and working at the plants and a variety of other sites that you don't see around the city when you're out and about, but have gone forward and are going forward and are more life cycle replacement oriented. And then we've gone to also doing some projects with arts and cultural this year. Most of you have been in the Arizona Museum for Youth, Amy. We've got quite a nice facility there now. In Mesa Arts Center, we were able to do some low-cost modifications to the glass studio. And we ended up with some funding this year for the Mesa Grande Ruins to do some improvements there. Facilities maintenance, these are also projects we bring forward that you see. We will have more of those upcoming where we do life cycle replacement of major equipment, just primarily heating, ventilation, air conditioning equipment in the buildings. And then we've also made some budget modifications in the last 3 years that
Before we go on, and as I'm going through all these, this great list of projects that have been done in the last year or so, we just probably need to restate, because I'm sure that some people would say, wow, yeah, we're sitting here and we're talking about cuts and
yes.
reductions and public safety and all that, and yet there's millions and millions of dollars in projects that have gone on here. If you could just very quickly, well, I guess we don't have to have you explain, but all these projects were either paid out of restricted funds, such as, for example, all the stuff in arts and cultural,
yes,
which
sir.
Could not be used and were specifically dedicated, collected and dedicated for these types of projects, or out of voter-approved bond programs or out of stimulus monies.
You are correct.
Or a combination of all of the above.
All of the above.
So when we're talking about, $1.8 million at Falcon Field and the storm drain and all that, there was never a discussion as to do we spend it on this or do we spend it on sure. firefighters. Those are totally different pots of money, which cannot be cross utilized.
Yeah. They are completely different budgets and completely different funding sources. We get a lot of grants in our funding programs, and this year we were able to capitalize on a lot of stimulus money. And so I'm going to talk about that in just a minute as well. But those funds are set aside as one-time funds, and they aren't funds that you can use for ongoing operations and maintenance budgets. They're one-time capital funding that are pretty isolated.
It cannot be used.
Cannot.
Cannot, yeah. I thought I heard you say that can't.
No, cannot no, be cannot
used.
Be used.
I just want to make that clear, because I know, and even though we go through this little exercise about every time, yes, you know, most people still don't understand that the city's checking account operates differently than most of our home checking accounts, where we pay the mortgage and the grocery bills out of the same checking account. That's not how city finances really work. We have many separate checking accounts, and a lot of those are very, very restricted in what we can do with them, and we cannot transfer between those accounts.
Yes, that's exactly right. So, within our operating budget, we also have made some budget modifications. Tomorrow marks my third anniversary with the city, and so looking back over those 3 years, we've been able to do some streamlining with actually three departments. When I came, there were the capital fiscal group as well as the real estate group and the engineering departments. We've combined all of those into one group to kind of streamline the capital project. So that everybody's working on capital projects is together, and we were able to reduce some of the overlap in positions, administrative positions, and able to reduce seven positions over the last 3 years. As well as this year, when real estate became part of our budget, we went through the budgets as well and did some trending and looking back at what different things were costing us, and one of them was our Pinnell Farms tax that we pay every year for the 11,600 plus or minus acres we have in Pinnell County. And looking at the trends and then looking at the cost of what we are paying for in-lieu taxes, we've been able to reduce that budget by communicating with Pinnell County and kind of monitoring and maintaining those costs, keeping them in line. So we've been able to reduce that budget this year, as well as property maintenance savings. As the city has continued to sell properties and move some of those properties, then our what we saw as a trend in our budgets over the last 5 years is some savings and reductions in the property maintenance portion of our budget. So we've been able to reduce that. And then we've had other process streamlining that's occurred. A couple of things you may or may not know of. We essentially took staff from four separate office spaces, and we've been able to combine them together into two office spaces and do some things like that, that we've been able to do some reductions in our budgets. We've also gone this past year to online bid hosting, where all of our documents for people who are interested in bidding projects, they can now go online and get those. So we're no longer printing, reproducing those, and distributing those over the development services counters. So there's been some changes like that that we've been able to capitalize on. And then just looking towards the next year, some of the upcoming major projects we have moving. There is the, and I have one in acronym, Mayor, I do apologize, that is the stimulus funding, the ARRA funding. We have 53 lane miles we will be doing this summer into the fall throughout the city. We're working with ASU on a new ring road and utilities, two fire stations, Southern Avenue. It's just kind of a mix of some of the projects, Main Street. We've got a pathway project along the Consolidated Canal and three park and rides you'll probably be seeing contracts for this year. And I wanted to spend just a few minutes with this slide, because all of what you see on this slide is pretty much the stimulus-funded projects. And there are timelines associated with keeping the stimulus projects and getting them completed to secure that funding and then to be in a position to apply for additional funding. So one of those projects we got were $10.8 million in funding for streets to do street renovations, rehabilitations. That has already started actually up on Brown Road on a project up in that neighborhood, but we have many others coming. And what we did was we tried to look at this strategically and go to streets that aren't parallel where we can, but we do have some time restrictions. So we are starting now, and we'll be working into September, October timeframe to get all these street projects completed. And there will be barricades this summer we do ask that you bear with us, because it's really something we can celebrate when we're done. It's a great deal of public improvement for the federal funding we've received. So we wanted to bring that to your attention. And I think some of you will also notice that we will be having a few closures and restrictions in some of the intersections. We are working with the businesses in those intersections and talking to them about whether they would like to do a closure or do restrictions. And so I'll be talking to, I think I need to visit next with Councilmember Fenter. He's next on my list. So we'll talking to some of you here in a little bit. Looking into the future, some of the things we are looking at right now is a right-of-way management program. Kelly has started that process. We are very interested in our right-of-way, how we can be more efficient, more effective out in the right-of-way. We've done some things to streamline the permitting process, but also we want to look at doing things that protect our assets in terms of street cuts, pavement cuts. We want to talk to utilities about doing more joint trenching and being a little more efficient themselves in the right-of-way. So we may be back to talk to you about ordinance changes this year. We've worked to streamline our process. We kind of begged, borrowed, and pleaded, and picked up as many gently used laptops from other departments as we could, and we've now equipped all of our field staff. Knowing that we had a new fiscal program coming in the next couple of years for financial accounting, we also went out and visited with a variety of different agencies, and we were able to talk to the county, and they're letting us use their software program as a shareware for our field inspection group to monitor and track their programs. We're going to continue to look at that. We are the keepers of most of the infrastructure data, and I get a lot of requests. People walk to my office every day, and there's somebody standing at the counter wanting to know, do I have an easement? Where's the plat? How do I find this? Where's the water connection? Where's the sewer connection? We get a lot of those inquiries. A lot of our processes right now are paper and they're manual. So we are working. We converted to a technology position. Tony Bianchi joined us this year, and he's working to make those more transparent to the public and available, as well as internally and externally. So we hope to have some of those programs introduced. We're also working on a transparency program at the Capital Improvement Program with our budget department and our IT folks. We have two tools that we'll be introducing to you later this year. One, we're just kind of calling the 2008 bond dashboard, but it's an interactive online tool that we want to put out to the public to show them where all of the projects are on the 2008 bond package, the money that's been expended, the money that's been encumbered, what the schedules are. There are some nice pictures as well as a variety of graphic information that IT has been able to help us through. So that will be coming a little bit later. And we are working on an IT tool, an interactive map for the capital improvement program. Most of you know we hand you a book right about now that's about this thick. And it's not incredibly convenient to carry it around everywhere you go. But Tony's working with our IT folks in budget, and we're hoping to be able to release in July a map that you can go to that will take you to the projects and show you what money's been budgeted, what's been funded, give you the location on a map, and be more graphic-oriented. So,
can you turn it into an iPhone app? Because if you can,
you'd be
a lot better. Droid app, doesn't matter. Either one.
We can work on that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Councilmember Richens.
Are we ready for questions, comments yet?
Yeah.
Are we still? I can wait till that point.
Go right ahead.
I'll let you wrap up. Look at that.
You read my mind.
That's the great thing about having the advanced.
Yeah,
line.
I know.
You mentioned that you're going to be looking at ordinances.
Yes, sir.
And different things coming forward. I have one more I want to throw out for you. There's a concept called complete streets that talk about sidewalks, buses, shading, pedestrian amenities, and all that kind of thing. We have a lot of folks that use our streets besides just cars, particularly with an aging population. I'm seeing a lot more wheelchairs out on the street. And, you know, wheelchairs and bikes kind of use similar ways to get around. But there's ordinances out there that talk about complete streets that accommodate all of those modes, and I think it would be a great, especially because of our the older populations that we have, to consider some kind of ordinance related to that that helps us make sure when we design and engineer streets that we'll be able to include ways for those folks to be able to get around in the future.
Okay. Great.
Thanks.
Councilmember Fenter.
Well, I just want to express my appreciation, especially engineering and transportation. District 2 has been the recipient of like Gilbert Road improvements, and I think about the great look at reusing equipment to keep pools open, flooding conditions that were taken care of, and you know, thousands of dollars of damage avoided. And so it never ceases to amaze me how great things are going with engineering, with transportation, and just appreciate all that you do there. So thank you.
Okay. No, I'd like to say one thing. I've had good and bad experiences with engineering departments of many cities throughout the valley, and I appreciate the comments I'm getting back where our engineering department, which you know, frankly, over the years has not been user-friendly, has been very ranged from demanding to dictatorial in many instances, and I think that in some ways that's helped our city, but in other ways I think it's been a huge detriment to our city. I would like to say that the comments I've gotten back is that the engineering department under your direction has become much more user-friendly. I mean, this does not have to be our way. Oh, I could say our way of the highway. That's sort of appropriate for this. But, you know, the fact of the matter is this can be win-win. We can accomplish a well-engineered, but also recognize the challenges that our citizens have, that the development community has, that the business community has. And sometimes we enact or enforce really stupid regulations that don't do anything but make us happy. And I've noticed and gotten feedback that there's a huge change where it's a win-win, and we're facilitating people, helping them to achieve or to follow reasonable regulations which benefit all the citizens and also help people to succeed. And I've seen a change, and I've gotten feedback that there's been a big change. So thank you so very much, because I think that's headed in the right direction. I think that's thank good you. To have. Councilmember Summers.
Beth, on the slide 21, which is the bond and other projects, summer projects, Broadway Road isn't on there. The section of Broadway Road off about, 80th Street or somewhere in there, it's the inverted crown where it rains and all the floodwaters go to the middle of the road because, you know, you really want the road flooded when it rains. What's the status of that particular project?
Well, I must say you're a very quick learner. you're very good with you're getting very good with understanding all those
remedial
issues,
classes.
So, yeah, you're very good. So Broadway Road is actually in design, and it's not slated to start construction, I believe, till 2011. So we need to get through the design phase, which we're in the process right now. We have had some public meetings and started to take input, because I know when you work in an existing neighborhood, one of the biggest things people are concerned about are left turns, medians, how do they access their property. And so there's a process we go through right now during the design phase where we meet with people and we kind of work through a variety of details to make sure they're still accessing their properties. So.
Okay, so we're anticipating sometime next year.
Next budget cycle.
Yeah, we have about an 8 to 10 month design schedule, and the contract has been signed. We're doing the design now, and then we have some right of way to acquire, and then so really about a year out from now is when we'll have that bid
calendar
awarded.
Is it going to be this fiscal year or next fiscal year?
It's next fiscal, I think. Is it in that list?
Let's see if we had in.
It will be this fiscal year.
I think it's next fiscal. Yeah, it's a year
out.
Yeah,
it's actually in next fiscal year.
Next fiscal year. Is my memory.
Killing me.
These are really the projects, Councilmember Summers, that are going this summer. And most of these projects that we're showing on this are 30 to 120-day time frames. They're very quick. We're going to get in, pull up the asphalt, replace the asphalt mill, overlay, do some sidewalk modifications, ramps. But they're also a little bit more difficult because there's a lot of barricading that goes with that, and we have traffic restrictions. And these are on some of our major older streets in the city, so there's a lot of development. A lot of people use the streets, and it can become frustrating when the barricades go up. But we do want people to know that we're here. I put our public information hotline on the very last slide, the questions hotlines. If you all are out and about and you see an issue, you're concerned about a barricade or something doesn't look right, please call and let us know. If you got a concerned citizen, please call, let us know. We'll go out, we'll visit, we'll try to work through whatever may be. I know left turns in when we work with businesses is a big thing. So if you're having some concerns or issues, please let us know. We will get out there and work with them to do whatever can be done.
I was always one of those people who would pass by these barricades, swear that it was the state bird or state animal at this point, because it's all you ever saw were the barricades. I never believed I'd ever become frustrated by the fact that I can't get those barricades up as fast as I want, vis-a-vis Broadway Road and Signal Butte. It seems that the time frame for planning and engineering design and finally to get to construction is twice as long and three times as frustrating as it is to actually get the construction underway. But I appreciate your continued effort. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'll hear a presentation on state-imposed expenditure limitation alternatives.
We're going to impose a limitation on the state?
Yes.
That's a great idea.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. This morning, as you said, we're going to talk about our state expenditure limitation requirements, some alternatives to those limitations, penalties for exceeding the state-imposed limitation if we don't have an alternative, some of the history of what we've got on limitations in Mesa and the adoption of alternatives, how election cycle changes has affected our elections related to what we've done on alternatives, and the effect of not renewing our current home rule or adopting another alternative, and our staff recommendation and a calendar of events. Arizona State Constitution requires us to adopt a balanced budget, which is a novel concept, great thing to keep us in check. The feds obviously do not have this requirement on their budget. In 1980, the voters tweaked our Constitution and imposed an expenditure limitation. And the way the limitation would work, it was based on your 79-80 expenditures adjusted for population growth and inflation. And we're dictated whatever that limitation is in an annual letter each fiscal year based on those calculations. However, the same tweak by the voters allows for local elections to approve these alternatives and defines alternatives to the expenditure limitation. There's three main types that we'd be talking to from an operation standpoint. Home rule, it allows a city to determine its own limitation through the adoption of the budget, just like we do now. And it requires you to stay within your available revenues and resources. There's also what's called the permanent adjustment of expenditure base. I like to say this is really a misnomer because it does not permanently adjust. You just adopt a very large number in the future and hope that you don't exceed it sometime out. You would possibly come back and have to change that. And then they allow for a one-time override alternative, and it gives you a one-year window with specific budget items. You adopt a separate budget for it, and you track the budget separately for that. There are sanctions for exceeding the expenditure limitation. Every year we file a report with the Auditor General. They go through and measure that report against the required limitations, and they assess penalties ranging anywhere from 5% up to 10% of your budget. And what they do is retain a portion of next year's urban revenue sharing, state income tax. Some of our history at the local level. Mesa approved a home rule expenditure limitation in the early 1980s. It was not renewed and it expired. Another home rule alternative was approved in March of 2000. It's been renewed in 2004 and in 2008, and it will expire June 30th of 2012. Now, this is where we get into why we're having to do this so often. In 2005, the state legislature required all cities with a population greater than 175,000 to hold their primary elections, council elections in September, and their general elections in November. We were the only city in the state under a home rule at that time that with the implementation of that, we did not have a chance for an election prior to the expiration of our home rule allowance. So they allowed us a one-time exemption. So in March of 2008, we went to election and it was renewed. Now the problem with that is that threw us out of, we're still out of cycle with our four-year election for council and mayoral. So if we do not have a vote on this or send it to the referral in November of 2010, will expire again before the next four-year cycle comes up on your next set of elections in 2012.
Councilman Richens.
And can you only have a home rule election when you're electing?
It's required by law. Yes. It has to coincide.
We didn't finish the question here. Okay, finish your question. Can you only have an election when?
When you're having an election when you're electing a council member or mayor in the same election.
All of these alternatives are required to be on your council mayoral cycle.
It'd have to be the mayoral cycle because that's the only citywide election.
No, it
legally does not have to be on the mayoral
election. That's a change in what I was been told a month ago.
What it requires is that it be held at a regularly scheduled election for the nomination or election of members of the governing board. So it can be on the 2 years other than the mayoral election. The problem, practical problem, is that is not a citywide election if it's not the mayoral election. So there could be additional election costs in having a citywide election.
Okay, now that's a change because I was told that that we had to do it on the mayoral cycle because to not have it create questions as to whether it was truly a city election or not. So what you're saying is that's changed. A month ago, I was told something different. So I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I just want to make sure that we're absolutely clear on where we are.
No, I'm comfortable in where we are because this is what the law says. It does not say it has to be at the mayoral election, but it has to be
a citywide election because our problem is that the only election that is citywide is a mayoral election because because council members are elected by district. And so, for example, if we had, I guess we could have it this November, since it coincides with a general election where everyone's voting, and I guess every time we vote now, okay, let's think this through. Every time we vote now, since we're on a September, November, even year schedule, we're not going to have an election in a normal cycle that's not going to coincide with some citywide election, right? Well, I mean, when I say citywide election, there's not going to be a statewide or other office that's going to involve all.
Well, and I think the issue is, and I do have the last slide, I talk about the complication of this council district being, in essence, a half a city election. You can pay for a citywide.
Well, but wait a second. If we're electing a governor, for example, even if we're only electing two of the council members, that's still going to involve all the city in an election in November. Our city, this year, we're voting on three council districts and no mayor. So from a city standpoint, there's not a citywide, let's say there's nothing else on the ballot, there would not be a citywide issue. But we're also voting for a governor and an attorney general and everything. So everyone in the city is going to be voting in November. So it would be very simple to piggyback and have everyone in the city vote. And I think that'll be true for every single, since we're on an even year basis, we're always going to have voters going to the polls in November. The entire city going to the polls in November because we either have a congressional or legislative, state legislative, or city. So there's always going to be a November. Everyone in the city is going to be voting the first Tuesday in November. That makes sense?
Yes, it makes sense.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is that the points are probably moot because we don't incur additional expenses. We don't have to have a special election because we're already on that cycle since we're on a September-November cycle. That means that everyone's going to show up regardless of whether the mayor's on the ballot or not on the ballot. Well, I'm getting a lot of blank faces, so either I'm doing a really bad job of explaining or...
What you're saying is there's no practical difference now.
Yeah.
Legally, it still is what the Arizona Constitution requires, is just that the home rule election be held at a regularly scheduled election for the nomination or election of members of the governing board. Since this is the governing board, it can be held at any regular.
What I'm saying is that, you know, our concerns before and whether it's legally, there's also a fairness and a practical.
Right.
If we had an election where there were only two districts and we ran a home rule, I think we would be open justifiably for some question as to why would you run home rule when you only have two districts and there's no other city citywide issue out there. I think that we would be justifiable, and I would not be in support of that. I think what we're saying is that regardless what the legalese says, that the legalese and the practical have merged. And so I'm really bringing up a sort of a non-issue, which had I thought about it before I brought it up, I wouldn't have brought it up. But since I thought it up while I was bringing it up, it sort of made it difficult. Everything what I said, I think that regardless of what the law says, it allows us legally to do this whenever. I think practically, we're never going to have a home rule, override, whatever you want, election that isn't going to coincide with an issue that everybody in the city is going to be voting on. Because we're either going to have statewide issues, or we're going to have legislative or congressional. So everyone's going
to
be voting.
So, is the goal to do it then this fall and then again in the fall of 2012? Well, so we get on that mayoral cycle?
That would be council's discretion. I believe Chuck is going to recommend we do it in 2010, because if we don't do it in November 2010, home rule will expire before you have the opportunity to send it again.
And I'm not sure. And that's the deal, is I thought it was to get on the mayoral cycle, but it's not that. It's to get on the even year general election cycle.
It is now coinciding with the new requirements.
Because if we were on an odd year, it would be much different. We'd almost have to have a special election because we wouldn't coincide with any other citywide issue such as state legislative or congressional elections. But since we are already on an even year, that sort of takes care of a lot of our issues, except for it raises the issue of timing, because if we don't have it this year, we would have to do a special election, and we can't do a special election.
You can't do a special election for home rule.
Yeah, so it's got to coincide, and we don't have another election between now and then that coincides. Okay,
that is correct.
Gotcha. I think we just cut through most of your presentation, did we not?
We get to it, and then probably you would like the option on the last slide here.
Vice Mayor, you have a question?
Well, we're talking about, we need to do it in 2010.
Correct.
And then in the future, the decision is, do you get on the mayoral cycle or just stay on a four-year cycle?
Either way.
You're still going
to
be
either way,
fall.
And that's where it came up in a discussion a month ago, because we thought we needed to be on the mayoral so that everyone got to vote. But once again, if we're voting in November, it doesn't matter as long as we're even here.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That makes sense to me. I have no idea. Vice Mayor and I think understand that we're either all wrong or everyone else is. We're all whatever.
You guys are doing great. Just keep going.
Now, Councilmember Kavanaugh is going to explain it. To us.
No, I was going to cut to the chase and move that we give direction to place us on the November ballot.
Thank you. I think that's what we, I think, as everyone, okay, everyone is clear what we want to do. All right, is that the direction? I see a lot of nods. Go for it. Okay. And then we can talk later. We have plenty of time to talk as to whether we're going to then come back in 2012, but I think that right now, once we get on a four-year November cycle,
we're covered.
Well, then I'll just go to the calendar events on slide number 11 for you. We're getting direction today. So on May 22nd, 29th, we will publish notices of public hearings related to home rule alternative. June 7th, the regular council meeting will be first public hearing related to this. June 21st, a regular and a special council meeting will be a second public hearing, then the approval of the resolution.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry for prolonging the misery, but I wanted to get that explained. Now we'll hear our presentation on utility revenue bonds. It gets more exciting with each agenda item. You thought home rule was exciting enough? Revenue bonds now.
Thank you, Mayor. For that intro.
Councilmember Kavanaugh wishes to cut to the chase. Sorry, Mr. Raines.
No,
go ahead.
No, that's fine, Mayor. Five slides, one of which is the title page. We've talked previously with staff, council has talked previously with staff about the four major utility system revenue bond areas and upcoming projects that we anticipate in the next 4 years. And as part of their presentation, they've included listings of general project descriptions and amounts that they propose that we include on a ballot for this November. So I've just summarized those in the four slides you have related to those four items. I know Catherine and Frank are both here to speak to any questions you might have, but just a quick review of water system bonds. The recommendation would be for $98.8 million. Wastewater system bonds for $39 million, and you can see the general project areas listed below that. Natural gas system bonds for $48.4 million and the various projects, and then our electric system bonds for $15.9 million. Again, this would be a recommendation for the November 2010 election and would carry us in through until potential election would then be scheduled for potentially in November of 2014.
Okay, so, and just to summarize, we've already had...
These are the presentations that...
We've already had specific presentations on these. These are revenue bonds, which means they are not property tax related, and this is not... This does not create an increase in any rates or anything because these expenditures are anticipated in our revenues long term. They are recurring, they are replacement, they are system connected, and therefore they have been considered within the rate structure that we look at every year. And therefore,
well, yeah, Mayor, let's be clear: they are currently contemplated. The cost for these bonds are contemplated or covered by the utility rates that has been presented to the council,
and that has been
introduced to the council.
It has been presented to the council for many years. This is a component of the rate that's every year. So there's not any change, jump, or anything. These are just the bonds that we are being asked to approve and put on the ballot. This is a normal part of business.
It is. It's something we do typically every 4 years.
And have been done for years and decades and our generations.
And Mayor, the only thing I would say is that as we, between now and the call of the election, we are working with some larger developments, and there may be a need to accelerate some. Remember, as we, as we sized these bonds, we took out a lot of the new growth cost. We are starting to get some feedback that some of that may be coming a little bit sooner. So we may adjust some of these numbers a little bit, mostly in the water, wastewater, if we see it. But we'll let you know before the call of the election where we actually have to set the actual amounts. But we just wanted to touch base. Sometimes we have these conversations, but what we are proposing is to prepare to go forward for the call of the elections, bond elections, revenue bond elections for these utilities. It's consistent with the presentations you received, as the mayor said. It's consistent with the rate structures that have been presented to the council and that will be considered as part of this budget process.
Okay.
As you know, Mayor, these would be approved in November, and then they would be sold. Typically, we sell them in a series of sales each following spring on those.
Okay. Direction to move ahead, contemplating a formal approval, like in July, right, is when we would call the election.
When we call the election.
While we move ahead, if there's no problem, let's go ahead and move ahead, consistent with what's been presented.
Good enough.
Okay.
Mayor, I also have item C, and I didn't pass out anything. Just wanted to make sure, remind everybody that it's on everybody's agenda that we are still working with Southwest Gas to do a franchise renewal for their franchise agreement. And so we'll try to get that one on the November ballot also. Just wanted to make
that
sure.
That is expired,
aware.
Correct, Brian?
We renewed it with an ordinance last year.
Okay, that's right, and we need to take it to the ballot.
We need to take it to the ballot.
Vice Mayor?
In light of that, and with discussions we had recently about the rates for the MAGMA, I would like to get the feel of the council. I think it's time that we look again at doing the swap as far as getting back within our city limits with Southwest Gas and swapping MAGMA. We're getting closer. There's still disparity as far as the number of meters, but I think it's time we try to get back within the city and just at least have the talk with Southwest about if we're getting closer.
It's an ongoing conversation with them. Every time we meet with representatives, we let them know.
Next time you meet with them, if you could give a report back to us as to
glad to do that.
I understand that these things don't happen overnight.
We will keep pursuing them, Mr. Ains and I, at every occasion, but we'll make another formal approach to it.
Okay.
Speaking with them in the next couple of days, so I'll mention it again.
All righty.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That's it.
We're now going to try to acknowledge receipt of minutes, which we failed to do last meeting. We have a motion from Councilmember Summers, second Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Reports on meetings or conferences attended. Vice Mayor?
Returned last night from the American Public Gas Association conference in D.C. and meeting again with our congressional folks back there, very successful meetings, and trying to make sure that our ratepayers and our gas utility are protected. And we, again, had a very good meeting there, and leave it at that. It's great to be able to go and advocate on behalf of our city in a variety of things, and one of these this time around was our gas utility.
Thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Last night, you and I attended the 46th graduating class for the Citizen Police Academy, and this is a great program run by the city for our residents that really gives participants an opportunity to understand up close and personal how our police department works. And I just wanted to say thank you to all the police department staff who participate in this program, for the city for encouraging it, and for the residents who graduated last night. Thank you.
Didn't you have something on Saturday, too?
Well, we did have a nice...
That was...
We had a very successful pancake breakfast with at Rhodes Junior High School with people doing Surfing the Flow Rider and eating pancakes, hopefully, in that order. And we did not have any accidents, thank goodness, but we had a tremendous amount of participation by the city departments. I want to thank all the volunteers who came from the city, who helped out the fire department with the vaccinations. And it was a nice showcase for a great facility, and many people were very surprised and pleased to learn that they can rent that facility out, including the Flow Rider, for company parties, birthdays, anniversaries, things like that. And I want to compliment our Parks and Recreation staff for their being enterprising in working to market that program. I think it's going to be very successful for the city. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. I wasn't part of the city, but I sat on a master's thesis committee the other day, and the topic of this particular thesis was the utilization of licensed nurse practitioners in the pre-hospital setting in order to reduce demand on EMS service, reduce the cost of health care for individuals. The thesis was done down in the Green Valley area. It was quite interesting. As soon as I get a copy, he passed, by the way. I get you a copy. I like to show the city manager what they were doing. It was a fascinating concept. Still, idea still needs to ripen a little bit, but it was very interesting. Finally, as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to congratulate my son, Tyler, who last night was one of 26 students at Highland High School who was inducted into the National Honor Society. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. The Mayor, Congressman Flake, and I had the opportunity to attend the presentation to Ishikawa on Monday for the A-plus school designation. And Ishikawa is one of only 10 schools in the whole state. Is that correct? Was that correct, Mayor?
20.
20?
Still
10, 20.
Quite an elite group.
Elite group of schools that made the designation of an A-plus school. So congratulations to Ishikawa. And we had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Thank you. Had a couple of events. Councilmember Higgins and I were able to tour the new Boeing facility last week. Not the new Boeing facility, but the production line.
The production line, to see
for
that.
The unmanned helicopter. Very interesting. It's all composite. I mean, the skin of this, the fuselage is... you know, barely thicker than a sheet of paper, and yet it's unbelievably strong. It's a fascinating process. Very exciting to see the this line of work come into Mesa. Starting out a little bit slow now, but looking at the potential for that product, it looks like it could have a long run with a lot of good jobs here in Mesa. So appreciated that. Also had the opportunity to attend on Sunday with the Vice Mayor. The 100th anniversary of the First Christian Church of Mesa, a longtime Mesa fixture there on North Country Club. And it's great to see the number of congregations that have passed their 100-year mark in Mesa. The faith-based community has always been an important part of our community, and continues to contribute and to add a lot to the quality of life in our community. And Councilmember Higgins and her faith-based initiative has done a great job in the last year or so of pulling different congregations and different faith groups together to pool our resources to provide service opportunities in our city, which has really caught on, and we've been able to accomplish a lot of good things, and look forward to increasing those also. So thank you. Okay, anything else? Oh, the service awards yesterday. Several council members, I think a couple of us were gone, but got to help celebrate with many City of Mesa employees, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, do I hear 40, 45?
No 40s, it's just 35.
No, we 15 years and above service certificates, which was very, very nice. Our Human Resources Department did a good job of recognizing those city employees that have given many years of good quality service. Still a strength of our city is the quality of our city employees. So, you know, just a small token of our appreciation, but it's a daily occurrence when I get good news about our city employees. They do a great job of serving the citizens of Mesa. And I think that's it. Mr. Brady.
Yes, remind the members of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. There's a committee meeting following this study session. And also tonight, there's a Building Stronger Neighborhood kickoff meeting at Fremont Junior High, correct? 6:30 p.m. So invite the residents in that area who've gone through the survey to be part of that. And we'll have another study session on May 13th. Council, we have some very good news for the City of Mesa. Despite the fact for the last 4 years we've been having to take some very austere measures in our financial and our budgeting and reducing our budgets, I think we've done it in a very strategic manner. 2 years ago, even despite going through significant reductions, the city received an upgrade in its bond rating from Standard & Poor's to a double A. For the last 2 years, though, we've maintained our A1 rating from Moody's. However, yesterday, and I'm going to attribute this to the Vice Mayor's participation in our bond rating call, and Deputy City Manager Brian Raines' work, for the first time ever in the history of Mesa, we now can say that we have a double A rating from both of the major bond rating institutions. So Moody's now upgraded us yesterday to a double A2. When you want to understand the difference is, when we were an A, we were considered above average in creditworthiness. At a double A, we are now considered to demonstrate very strong creditworthiness. I think that's remarkable to do that, certainly in good times. To do that when you are having to make very challenging decisions is incredible. So we appreciate all the work of the staff who helped put this together, the council for laying out the strategic plan that I think is impressive, that we disciplined ourselves to stay within our financial means, and we have a good plan going forward. And that's part of this, is that stability to look forward, that we can weather. If we can weather these times, we're in good shape. So I just wanted to let council know about that. We'll be getting that press release out today to the community. It also means when you get to a double A, there are many financial institutions that can now look at purchasing our bonds. Because of that rating, they are restricted to only in being able to invest in certain bonds that have a certain rating, and this certainly opens up the market even broader for us for that. So hopefully the competition for the bonds will be selling on the market in the next day, 19th. We'll get some competitive bids on that. So that's the good news. And then last point, Natalie Lewis, is she here? There she is. Natalie, why don't you come and
While Natalie's walking up, if I could just say one thing about our bonds. I will say I've been sort of outspoken critical on other government agencies that I believe manage to bond rating, which I think is wrong. We should manage to serve the citizens of Mesa. And, you know, the bond rating falls out where it falls out. And that's been my philosophy. So I think, and I don't think Mesa manages to its bond ratings. We don't make program decisions. We don't make financial decisions purely so we can improve a bond issue, because I think when you do that, you forget who you're serving. So to me, this is an especially gratifying accomplishment, because as we go through our normal everyday business, what this does is this confirms that not only right now, because this is a snapshot, but it's also an accumulation of many years of what I believe has been sound financial management by this city. And this is an affirmation that as we go through and we serve the citizens of Mesa, sort of the byproduct of those efforts is recognition that from an outside agency that we're doing it in a way that's financially responsible. Thank you, Vice Mayor. And so that's why I feel especially good for, because it's easy to get a high bond rating if that's what you're pointing toward. Just don't spend money on anything and sock it away. There are government agencies that do that, and that's not difficult. It is very difficult to get a good bond rating while you're providing a high level of services and doing so with a limited amount of resources. And so I commend our city staff and the citizens of Mesa, because you've demanded a philosophy of financial management that has been responsible, and this is a result of that. So I think that is very good news. Thank you. Okay, Natalie.
Councilmember Cavanaugh, do you want to start, or would you like me to?
Okay. I want to thank Natalie for working very hard on this program that we're going to announce this morning. As you know, Mesa is the most engaged of all Arizona cities in the National League of Cities, with our service on the committees and our participation in the many programs. National League of Cities has an enterprise program for its member communities that was created in mid-2009 to bring all these programs together. And right now they have their are four existing programs and two new programs under review. Mesa's long been a member of the U.S. Community's Government Purchasing Alliance, which creates opportunities from time to time for us to take advantage of savings nationwide on goods and commodities. Last year, you gave us permission to join the National League of Cities Prescription Discount Card Program. We've had, through the first 9 months, more than 750 of our residents have been saving thousands of dollars on their prescription costs as part of that. And as the mayor said, we have great employees, and we're always looking for opportunities to provide rewards for our employees. And this next program that the city has been invited to participate in is called the GEM program. It's the Government Employee Marketplace Program. And this is a one-stop web portal for government employees that is free for city employees, easy to join, and it provides, our research shows, Natalie's research shows, that it provides substantial savings for our employees in terms of discounts and promotions on clothes, automotive, computers, electronics, food and drink, home and garden, sports and fitness, toys, travel, all those sorts of things. And we believe that through the discounts and promotions that are available, that our employees can save significant sums annually. Many of the discounts are exclusive to the National League of Cities. But the National League of Cities heard from its members to say, use the strength of its size and its communities to create enterprise programs that bring additional return on investment to the communities, to what we do in terms of advocacy and research and assistance and everything like that. But Natalie, I really appreciate all the work she's done in discussions and cooperation with National League of Cities staff. And her research showed that she thinks it's a good thing for us to do. So, Natalie.
Thank you, Councilmember Cavanaugh, and thank you for thanking me personally. I've had a lot of help on this, and in particular from the Human Resources Department. Mary DeLay and Christina Hackstrom have been part and parcel to all of this and very involved in the research. To help this. And, you know, our feeling on any of these kinds of programs and pilot programs is if we can add value to our city or to our employees, then that's what we should be doing. We already have what's called an employee discount network that we have available to our employees today But when we looked into this particular model, we just found it to be much more robust. It provides more connections for our employees to national vendors and allows them to do some things that the other program doesn't. So it really will be an enhancement and a good program for our employees, and we're really glad to test this out, be a part of the pilot program, and really appreciate the council members. Your roles on the National League of Cities are very important, and bringing these kinds of programs to us so that we can give them a try.
Okay, thank you. Vice Mayor.
And the important part of this, as with the prescription program, very minimal management costs locally, because all we're doing is opting into a program that exists. And this is very much the same thing. We're just making that portal available to city employees to access that whole organization.
You're exactly right, Vice Mayor. The way that they do this at the National League of Cities is they go out and benchmark nationwide. They come up with what they think is the very best practice, and they create it, and they put as many of the tools in place as possible so that it can become turnkey for the cities that are piloted in it. So it is a great partnership.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Did it? Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'll now entertain a motion
We go into any session.
Vice Mayor has movelated. Moved. Movelated. It's a new word. No. We have a motion from the Vice Mayor to move into executive session, a second from Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are now moving into executive session. Thank you so very much.